We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Schmo Zone podcast. This is episode number 72. I'm Dave Schmolenson, a.k.a. The Schmo. My co-host is...
Helen Yee with Helen Yee Sports.
And today's guests are the WBO super featherweight champion, Michaela Mayer, and her boyfriend, the all-pro punter, Marquette King. Thanks for coming in the Schmo Zone today.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Of course. We tried to set this up a couple of weeks ago, but it didn't work out. You were supposed to be in town for the Fury Wilder 3 fight card.
Yeah.
You hit me up. You told me you were coming in town. You're training for the next couple of weeks. And I know Helen wants to say a big congratulations to you.
Yeah, congratulations to being on the first all-female broadcast, Top Rank, August 14th with Christina Poncher. Shout out to Christina. She's awesome.
She's awesome.
You're awesome. And congrats. It's a huge deal for boxing.
Thank you. I don't have a ton of commentating experience. I did my first gig on ESPN about a month back. But being alongside Christina Poncher, she's a pro. We'll get it done. It's going to be good.
That's exciting stuff. And Marquette, you're down here too. You're training for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, just getting a little work in, man. I still haven't given up. Still working hard. Still waiting for the next opportunity.
Really quickly on Marquette King, for those people that aren't as familiar, I'm a huge football fan. I know a lot of...
We didn't know that till today.
Well, huge.
You thought you were MMA.
I'm huge MMA. You said that, UFC, but boxing as well, combat sports. But the NFL, man, you were the flashiest punter in NFL history, man. I know 2014 you led the league in yardage. In 2020 in the XFL, too, with the St. Louis team, I think you led... yardage as well, but you were doing like backflips and shit, and you know like Terrell Owens always does the touchdown celebrations. Yeah. Ocho Cinco, great, who's in boxing now too, or just won his fights. They have great celebrations. You didn't even have to get in the end zone, you had great celebrations.
I know. I mean, you got to find a way to make the punt position a little interesting. Like, it gets boring standing on the sideline chilling for everybody else the whole time, so I had to find a way to make it fun.
But you're a great athlete too. How'd you end up being a punter?
Man, my coach threatened to take my scholarship from college if I didn't continue punting. And, you know, black people don't kick balls that good in America, so it's a little different. But, I mean, I was actually pretty good at it, so he made me stick with it.
Yeah, you were definitely really good with it, man. I don't even know how do you – hang time's an important thing in NFL punting.
Yeah.
And, like, getting in the pockets and making sure that it wouldn't go in the end zone, but within, like, coffin – corner punts, is that right? I got my Madden game on. So.
I always try to find a way to make my job interesting. So, like, I put trash cans in the corner of the, what you call it, where the end zone and the 5-yard line are, and I just try to aim to drop it in the trash can. And sometimes, like, even when I was in Denver, like, the fans would go from watching the whole practice with the other team to watching me on the field by myself just trying to aim it in the trash can. And I get so close to get crazy out there.
Yeah, you're rocking an Oakland A's jersey. You played for the Raiders, but the Oakland Raiders are now here in Vegas. Could you imagine playing for the Vegas Raiders?
I thought I was going to play for them at one point. Thought I was, but nah, not now. It ain't happened.
How come?
I don't know. Some people, I mean, things just happen. Some people like you, some people don't, and you just got to keep doing what you do. Just like with your fan base, like, it's some people that probably don't like you, some people that do like you, but you continue to be who you are as a person, and you'll attract the people that you need to attract.
It's crazy, too, because with your sport, too, in particular, the fucking politics that are involved with it, like, like Tim Tebow on a roster before Colin Kaepernick in terms of just skill set for that position, quarterback. I know he's a tight end though, if he makes the team. But
maybe I need to go to church a little more. It might happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if
politics in every sport.
I agree.
He tries to be like, I wish I was in boxing because they let you be who you are, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, listen, there's politics in boxing too. I don't really fully understand the politics of the NFL. Like, I don't really know if your personality and you being this, you know, a little bit more of a out there kind of punter and, like, you know, doing celebration dances. I don't know if that has an effect on, you know, anyone wanting to pick you up or sign you, but you always say, like, in boxing, they, like, embrace that. They want that. Like, we need that. So, I don't know. I mean, I hope that's not the reason, because at the end of the day, we're both in a sport for entertainment, right? It's entertainment at the end of the day.
True. At the end of the day, though, too, like, punters and kickers are just known for being, like,
so, like, a quarterback can celebrate and do flips, but not the punter?
Well, kind of not.
I'm asking.
Well, Pat McAfee's crushing it right now with his podcast. He's a punter.
He's killing it. That's my boy. He's killing it.
He's outgoing. But the politics for you is sometimes just getting on the squad. The politics for you, it doesn't matter how well you perform in there in the ring. Like, there's three people that are deciding the fate, you know, of looking at the scorecards. And it changes. And we have this problem in MMA. We talk about it all the time, too. Just the athletic commissions varying from state by state, the backgrounds varying from state by state. Should we take a shot? Is that what that we're doing? Hey,
it's a little different when you cross over in your 30s. So I can't just straight up take it down.
Oh, please. I've seen you. Oh, she's but a little no, different. What was I going to say?
Like the judging?
Okay, so the difference with MMA and boxing, though, is that you guys catch a loss in MMA, and as long as you put on a good performance and the fans love you, you're coming back. In boxing, we still have this, like, protect your O kind of mentality, which is kind of like the Floyd Mayweather, you know, result of his career and everything, keeping that O. And, yeah, it's important. But at the end of the day, like, we got to change that. We got to be able to fight the best of the best. Like, let's fight. If you lose, you lose. You put on a good performance. Like, people still want to see you. That's all that should matter.
100%.
Yeah. Well, what do you think should happen? Like, do you think anything should happen in terms of, like, the judging system or who becomes a judge, like the criteria?
I definitely think you should be penalized for obscured, like, scores.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, sometimes you get these fights where you got, like, three or four of the judges who are pretty much in line with each other, and then you have one who is completely...
Yeah, there's always one of them like that.
Yeah. No, you should definitely, they should definitely be investigated for that. I don't know how you investigate. I don't know. But.
And to answer to what you were saying before, just like there's so many different cooks in the kitchen, so many different promotions, and it's so hard to get the best fighters to fight the best fighters. Like, for me, I've always said
another
this too.
Thing.
Best welterweights on the planet, I've always felt like right now, Terrence Crawford. Bud Crawford, who's a top-ranked promoter, and then obviously Errol Spence Jr., who's fighting Manny Pacquiao, which
they
is a fantastic fight.
Yeah.
But Helen's always said it too. She's pressed Leonard Ellerbe on this even 2 years ago. But why isn't Bud Crawford fighting Errol Spence? You know, and Bud Crawford not getting the top-ranked competition. Now I really freaking hope that Sean Porter fight actually happens and materializes, so we can see that PBC.
It's got Crawford. To. It's a mandated.
It's
right?
mandated. Yeah.
So it's going to happen. That's the difference between boxing and MMA, and I think a lot of MMA fans don't really acknowledge that, but or they don't understand, like, why aren't these big fights happening? It's a huge reason why the UFC is so popular right now. Like, if someone goes on a podcast right now, if you were, like, in any top fighter and you call out a fighter and you say, let's make this happen, Dana White's going to step in and say, okay, there's fans behind this. There's excitement behind this. Let's make it happen. It's not that easy in boxing. You have different promoters and you have different networks. So, like, Top Rank is with ESPN. They have a contract with ESPN. PBC, Al Haymon, has a contract with Fox. And so you're trying to fight to keep your best fighters on your network with your promotion. And the fighters can call out whoever they want, but at the end of the day, it comes down to the promoters actually making it happen.
But does it ever get frustrating? Like, for you, for example, if you want to fight, like, the best or fight somebody, but then knowing your promoter, like, it's very hard to make that happen?
Yeah, so that sort of happened, like, with my next fight. I won the WBO world title in October, and in boxing, there's four belts. It's the four-belt era. to win all four belts, to become undisputed. So that's my goal, to become undisputed at 130. And so I wanted to unify right away with the other champions after I won in October. And we tried to get that fight done with IBF champ Maeva Hamadouche, and it didn't happen. And you get people on social media saying, oh, you're scared, this and that. And like, no, I'm pushing for these fights. I want these fights to happen. At the end of the day, the promoters have to agree. What country is it going to happen in? Is it going to happen in the UK where they belong, or in America? Is it going to happen on ESPN? Is it going to happen on DAZN? The money, everything is like, there's so many things involved. We finally got the fight done. So that will happen like October, November. I'll unify with the IBF champ. But there's just so many factors that go into it. It's all about money.
And that's what's screwing up the whole Caleb Plant and Canelo fight. Caleb's got the IBF belt. Yeah.
What is the last word on that?
It's off.
The talks are off.
Yeah, but like, did you hear why? I haven't heard why.
Well, Caleb put out a statement for his side, but I don't think I heard anything from Canelo yet.
Yeah, you never know. You just never know. Like,
the language in the contracts, like, I'm sure, no, I know it wasn't like about a rematch clause. I know that's a given. I think everyone agreed to that. I think the money was there. I just think it was just like the language.
It'll
just
happen. I think it has to happen. If Canelo really wants to go undisputed, which to like lay his legacy down, you know, cement his legacy, he needs to. So the fight's got to happen.
It has to happen too. And then what kind of payday, like, I think a $10 million payday, somewhere in that range for Caleb Plant. He fights anybody else, a David Benavidez, who's got a fight coming up to, or anyone. Like, the most he's going to make is $1 million maybe, or around in the million to $2.5 million range. Like, this is, we're talking
about.
This is
about, his big
this
fight.
This is the big payday.
And I don't even think he's, like, really, like, pushing for more and more and more. Like, I read his statement too. Yeah, he said there was no rematch clause. They came in at the end. They said, we want a rematch clause. Caleb's like, okay, I'll give you the rematch clause. Okay, I'll take this amount of money. Okay, let's just make it happen. But, you know, fighters get a lot of hate sometimes. So they're like, you're dodging your opponent, you're whatever. But it's the promoters. They have got to, they have their ego too. They have the what they want also.
This fight, if it doesn't happen, it's 100% on the promoters. Because I know both these fighters, they've agreed to it. They want it. I think this is falling on the promoters right now.
I agree. They'll make it happen. Sometimes you just got to play that game.
For sure. I could see you're big in the wilderness, big with dogs.
Yeah.
I know.
I should have brought them. They're here.
Love dogs.
Yeah, David loves
but
dogs.
But I love well-trained dogs because there's some, I mean, I like dogs that are, I'm assuming okay. You're trained.
She's
I'm
giving you that
book. Okay, so if you go to their Instagram page, their bio says, trained enough. Meaning they do everything I need them to do.
100%.
They may not do what you ask them to do.
No, and that's fair. Well, no, trained, like for example, like what I watched on your Instagram, you went swimming, they follow you, they stay there, they're obedient to you.
Thanks.
Yes.
I'm practicing.
Yeah, but like if, I'm talking about the types of dogs that just, they see someone new for the first time that you're cordial with and then you can't tame them around them.
Well, you know, dogs like that, it's their owners. They're not getting enough attention. They're not being active enough. They're not being socialized enough. Like, dogs are a full-time job. They're my kids. Like, you can't just put your dog in a kennel for 8 hours a day and move on and expect them to, like, act right. No.
So when you two started dating, I know you had your dogs.
Yeah.
How was that, Marquette?
It was okay. I started sneezing the first night.
He's allergic to dogs. No, he's amazing. He's allergic to dogs, and he still lets them, like, sleep in the bed with me, of us. Like, they jump on the bed. Like, they're not, like, they're very, you know, they're not, like...
I've had a dog before. I had a Chihuahua, though.
Those are the worst. The hardest to train.
Because I can put them in my book bag and skateboard to Whole Foods when I had to get food.
No, he's so great with them. Like, and they love him, and he's really sweet. He'll be sneezing in bed, but he doesn't, like, kick them out or anything. It's really nice.
Yeah.
And you're a big camper, too?
I love camping. I'm actually talking to her dad because her dad, Mark and Giselle, they got this thing where they build out vans and stuff. So I'm looking at getting a Mercedes Sprinter van and turning it into a whole living space.
My whole family does like the van life.
That's so
cool.
They all
live in vans. Like, I come from a family of hippies. So I brought him on a little van trip after my fight, last fight, and he's like totally obsessed now and wants his own van.
Yeah. Put a nice TV, a nice sound system.
His will be a little bougie.
It's going to be a little bougie.
And another thing about you, too, if I'm not mistaken, you were in a high school band. You're a band type girl. You're a music girl.
It wasn't a high school band. Like, I wasn't in band in high school. I, like, started my own rock metal band when I was a teenager. Yeah.
That's you were awesome. Young, and you kind of lied about your age. I don't know where I read this about.
I did lie about my age. Yeah. I thought they
never tell me some of these stories.
And he hates when I hear stories.
Good
that
God. Keep talking.
I posted an ad on Craigslist because I wanted to join an all-girl rock metal band. I was super into metal, a little metalhead. And I got
you.
Yeah. And so I was 12, but I lied and said I was 13 because I thought, like, they're never going to want a 12-year-old in their band. 13 is, like, not much better. But met him at the mall. My lead guitarist and singer of that band is now, like, the lead guitarist for Alice Cooper. She's, like, the best female guitar player in the world, Nita Strauss. Like, she's amazing. So she totally made it. I switched gears.
Obviously. But for the better.
Yeah.
For the better.
And how did that happen from being, you know, super into music and that scene and then being like, you know what? I love boxing and this is what I want to pursue. And obviously heading into the Olympics and turning pro August 5th, 2017. It's coming up. So congrats on that.
Oh, my gosh. Totally forgot. Well, you know, I kind of had a little trouble teenage life. I was hopping around in my fourth high school by the time I hit my senior year, and I had quit the band. Stupid boyfriend. I was like, oh, I don't want to be in a band anymore. I don't know, just dumb and young, right? Like, you just do so many dumb young things. And so I partied for a while, like, acted a fool, did dumb stuff, and then I was sort of in my fourth high school by the time I hit my senior year, and I was like, I am craving success. Like, I want to be good at something. Like, I don't want to just be this nobody, like, set to graduate high school a year late, like, nothing, good at nothing. And I said, like, let me just start by picking back up a sport. Like, my dad always had me in sports growing up, so I said, let me just start something new. And I walked into the Muay Thai boxing gym that was down the street from my house on Canoga and Shoup. Like, I drove by it for years growing up in the valley. And I just walked in and signed myself up. And I became obsessed with the sport immediately, which I think most people do, who, like, start fighting or any sort of combat sport. I became obsessed, fell in love. And within, like, a month, I told myself I want to be the best female fighter in the world. And this is, like, Gina Carano days. This is, like, UFC hasn't signed a female. This is Gina Carano. No promoters were signing boxers into the pro game. Like, we weren't allowed into the Olympics yet. So I really don't know what my, like, goal was or my plan was. I just knew I loved the sport and that I was going to make something happen.
That's incredible. And that's awesome that it's like you loved it and knew that was your passion and that's what you wanted to do. When, like you said, like, UFC, they didn't have Ronda Rousey yet, the Misha Tates, mm-hmm. and you didn't really know what the future would be. And then now look at how everything has evolved.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny because I never could envision exactly what my career would look like because there was no blueprint. There was no, like, path to follow. I just knew I would make it happen. And so it's just recently, like, in the last year or two, where I'm looking back and I'm like, wow. Like, the power of manifestation, the power of passion, and, like, finding something you really love. And look what I did. When there was no Olympics, there was no pros, I've done both. And now we're slowly, me and the other top girls in this game are slowly starting to create this blueprint and this path for this next generation. And I don't think I'll really fully understand what I've done until I'm done. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still in this mode, still trying to break barriers, still trying to build the best career I can for myself. And so I think I won't really see the full effects until I'm done and sitting back like, wow.
You're in your prime right now. Like, this is the golden
years. In a pandemic. I just thought about this. I'm like, why am I hitting my prime in a pandemic?
How did you have to, like, adjust or adapt your training during the pandemic and kind of even through this time where it's like, what, we have to kind of wear masks again?
Yeah, mask mandates are again. And
honestly, I didn't give a shit. I was like, boxing, everyone's on lockdown, whatever. Like, I am willing to die for boxing. Like, that is one thing I'm willing to sacrifice everything for. And so that did not stop my training. Me and my best friend, Jenny Few, she's the 112 pounder on the Olympic team right now. We were sitting in my living room, like, when the lockdown just hit and, you know, doing dumb shit, just, like, having fun. And I looked at her and I'm like, dude, I need to get back into training. We need to go to camp. We need to go train. She's like, well, where are we going to go? Everything's on lockdown. I'm like, let's just get in my Jeep and drive to Coach K. Coach K was in Virginia, all the way across from Colorado to Virginia. I'm like, let's just go. Let's just go and just, we'll get an Airbnb. I'll pay for it. Like, let's just go and we just got to focus on training. I'll bring the dogs and let's go. And she's like, all right, fuck it, let's go. And so we hopped in the car the next day and drove all the way across country and got an Airbnb and just started training. And good thing I did that because 5-6 days into being there, I got a call from Top Rank. And they're like, can you be ready in 4 weeks to fight? And we're going to have a show. Can you be ready? I'm like, I just got the training camp. Fuck it. Let's go. Let's do it. Yeah, I can be ready. And that was my first fight back with Helen Joseph when I wore the yellow. And it was on ESPN. And good thing I hustled and went to camp, because UFC was the first promotion to have a fight in the pandemic or have a card. And then Top Rank was second. So we're the only sports happening.
Yeah, it's wild. We've been there through it all. Like we were at that first card in Jacksonville when the UFC put everything
and
on.
And without fans. Like how was that?
It's crazy. It's a different, it feels so different, right, for you?
I won a world title with no fans. It was horrible. I didn't get my belt. Like she walked out into the, or she came to the ring with not the belt. So I didn't get the belt put around my waist. I didn't get like the fans cheering. I just thought it was like an awkward experience, but whatever. I got the win. That was just step one. So yeah, I'm glad fans are back though.
I know.
It's huge. It's huge. Let's talk Olympics right now too, because there's a lot going on with this, and just not even, Helen wanted to ask you a question too, about the Olympics and what's going on.
Well, obviously there is so much talk, and I know swimming just ended and whatnot, and even like gymnastics, they're going towards the end. I wanted to get your thoughts on Simone Biles, because obviously everyone's been kind of sharing their thoughts on just her decision.
So when that first happened and all this was like coming out on social media, I was like, whoa, what's going on? Because she obviously is the top of her game. Like she's competed at the highest level. She's felt nerves. She's felt pressure before. So I'm like, what's the difference this time? And so I texted my good friend Eddie, who was supposed to be on the Olympic team this year, but he injured himself right before. So I messaged him and I'm like, what's going on with Simone Biles? And he explained it to me. And this was right before she came out with the whole twisty statement. And she's like, it's hard to explain to people who don't do gymnastics, but she got the twisties. And it's basically like you lose track of how many flips you're doing in the air. And so it becomes dangerous because you land wrong. And because she's doing such a high level of gymnastics, it was really, really dangerous to get the twisties at that stage. So, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait till she comes out with that statement, because I can understand that. I don't do gymnastics, but if there's this thing called the twisties where I lose track just watching Simone Biles flip. Yeah. If she's losing track about how many flips she's on and landing wrong with her level of gymnastics, I mean, she could snap her leg off. Like, who knows what she could do? So that's what she had to make that decision and that call. And obviously for the medal, but also for her physical health. She wants to continue to do gymnastics.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I know mental health is a thing. Like, it's being transparent. I know, like, Kevin Love came out a couple of years ago in the NBA and spoke about it, too. I think there's two sides everyone looks at. Everyone's like, okay, is she doing this now because she's afraid, fear of losing, abandoning your teammates, that type of thing. Mental health, like, where does that stand? And then the other side of coin is, okay, let's be transparent with, you know, this is what I'm facing. This is what I'm going through right now. I just think the communication, like what you just said about breaking it down for people and understanding, I think there's always two sides to a story and different ways to explain it. I feel like that's been lost in translation.
Mental health is like a really broad statement, and there's still so many people who don't like give it any credibility. And I'm not that type of person. My best friend, Ginny, like I just spoke about, she suffers with major OCD. And this is my first experience with someone I really care about in mental health. And it is so real and it's so hard. And so, but there's so many different types of mental health. Like when you say mental health, that's very broad.
Right.
And it's hard for people to understand that who's never maybe had a friend or someone close to them and they've had to experience it. That's why I wanted her to come out with a twisty statement, because that just made more sense to me. And there's still some people, judgmental people who are like, oh, mental health, blah, blah, blah. But there's so many different forms.
And it's the Olympics. It's every 4 years. It's the biggest stage, too. So anyone can run off with a narrative, especially if it's coming out on that stage when you have all the biggest lights on you for that one time every 4 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much pressure in that moment. But if her mind wasn't right to, like, land the type of – I mean, she's doing gymnastics. That's harder than what the men are doing. Like, the shit she's doing is crazy. So if I knew I couldn't land right, I'd probably do the same thing. We'll never know. It's internal. Everyone has their own story, and we can't really just judge because we really don't know the situation.
For sure.
But as a pro athlete and being the top of your sport, like, how do you deal with sometimes now in that social media era where you say, like, for example, you know, if you're trying to make a fight, or like the Caleb Plant Canelo, and then just fans just start like attacking the athlete or the fighter.
No, I've gotten that. I especially got that in my last fight when we didn't make. I was supposed to unify with Maeva Hamadouche this last fight when I fought about a month ago against Erica Farias. Yeah. And they were like, oh, she's scared, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, motherfuckers, I'm the one pushing for the unification. Like, I am, that is not the case. But when the fight doesn't happen, they love to blame the fighter. But, and Coach Al has definitely instilled this in me, let them talk, don't respond. Your fans and your supporters will respond for you. They'll back you. Yeah. And then at the end of the day, the truth is going to be exposed. So, like, look, I could have gotten all pissed off at all the fighter, all the fans who are talking shit to me on Twitter or whatever, saying I was scared, but the fight's happening. So maybe I had to deal with like a few months of shit talk, but at the end of the day, the truth comes out. The fight's happening. So, you know, you just can't pay attention to any of that. And it's hard. You gotta have a thick skull. Like, you really have to have thick skin in this sport, in any kind of combat sport. No one, even gymnastics, like, if that was a fighter, imagine the, like, she's dealing with some backlash, but that's like a very Americanized sport, very respected sport. When it comes to fighting, we have some asshole fans. Like, we have the greatest fans, but we have some hardcore asshole fans. Like, they will just say whatever. They're the worst.
You're just modern day gladiators for that.
Especially on Twitter.
Twitter is horrible.
Toxic. Yeah.
So toxic.
The worst shit. No, what's good about you too, though, is obviously you're cerebral, you're at the top of your craft, and you got these broadcasting duties too, so you can diversify. But what I find such an interesting topic in combat sports is fighter pay, not just MMA, but boxing too. And you see a lot of MMA male fighters going into boxing for the big paydays. Obviously, everyone talks about Jake Paul, Logan Paul, the money fights. Mm-hmm. But what I find very fascinating right now, someone I think you're friends with, Clarissa Shields, is going from the boxing world to the MMA world, and a lot of the reasons behind it is money.
Yeah. So boxing, I mean, if you already have a name and you want to switch over into boxing these days, like, look at Jake Paul. It's a lot of boxing people who have been in the sport a long time think it's bad, and they think that, oh, this is ruining the sport, this is ruining the purity of the sport. But this is just the new day and age, right? Like, you got to keep up with the times. This is social media. It actually shows how important social media is, how much building your brand, how important that is. And so, yeah, there's some top MMA fighters who can cross over into boxing and get a good payday. But it still is really hard to get up to the level of, like, Pacquiao, Mayweather, Spence right now, the money that they're making, and even more so for women. It's just the money is way less for women, and we're working on changing that. Girls like Clarissa, me, Katie Taylor, a lot of the top girls around the world right now are working on closing that pay gap, but it's still a constant struggle, and we'll see. But I see why Clarissa Shields is making the transition. You know, she's trying to make the most of her career, athletic career, while she still can. You can't fight forever, and I think it's great.
And do you think more women are going to do that?
If they can, well, so here's the thing. I was going to cross over into MMA after the Olympics because no promoter was asking to sign me. We weren't being put, promoters were not signing women. And we weren't being put on TV. And I'm looking at the Ronda Rouseys and everyone. I'm like, okay, so they're getting the respect. They're getting the TV time. They're getting the money. Like, I'm a hustler. So I'm just going to go and do what I got to do to get to make the most of my career while I can. And I sat down with Top Rank last minute, and I got signed by, in my opinion, the best promoter in the world. And I have a great platform and network fighting on ESPN. And so I didn't have to make that transition. But promoters still aren't signing women as much as I thought they would by now, right? I'm still Top Rank's only female. PBC Al Haymon is not interested in signing a female. I don't know why. We're proven to be a sell. Like, there's some great, really talented women out there. It's changing. Matchroom, Eddie Hearn in the UK is the only one really signing and really has like a handful of women on their roster. So that's great, but it really just hasn't grown as much as I would have expected it to grow by now. So I don't blame people for transitioning to MMA because the women are getting the respect there. The promoters are respecting them.
That's what surprised me too, because it was like less than a decade ago when you never thought you would see a UFC the UFC promotion have female fighters, and the Ronda Rouseys and the Misha Tates, you know, they started taking.
Now they're at least like a headliner coming.
Oh, yeah. Everything. All the time. Yeah. All the time. And it's, see how much they've advanced in this little amount of time, and you would think that boxing would go with it, and it hasn't happened.
I don't understand. I think the Olympics was a huge transitioning point for us because now you have women who are able to compete at the highest level like the men. And so we come to the promoters with these resumes, right, and say, look, I'm a three-time national champion. I'm a world medalist. I'm an Olympian. The men have always been able to do that. They get one national title, and they're getting offers up the ass. Like, okay.
The bronze bomber. He's got a nickname out of it, Deontay Wilder.
Yes. And so women, I think now, because women were only inducted into the Olympics in 2012, it's still very new. But it's got to change. There's no denying us. I always say this. It's going to make a change because the talent pool is just too deep now. You have these young women competing at the highest possible level. There's so many of them. It's going to change eventually. It's just sad that it's taking these promoters like so long to adapt.
Well, what do you think it will take in order for it to change and for, like you said, more promoters to be more open-minded to signing females?
Just time. Yeah. I honestly just, like I said, like having the platform of the Olympics and being able to compete at the highest level, it's going to take girls like me, girls like Clarissa Shields, girls like these top girls just trying to diving their way, trying to make the best of their career while they can, and slowly creating this blueprint, slowly proving to the world that we have the skill and the ability. It's just going to take one great fighter at a time. But I don't think we'll reap the benefits of our work. I think the next generation will, or the generation after that.
So what's the blueprint for your greatness? What's it going to take for Michaela Mayer to be that face of boxing, to take the next step for your own personal growth and your career growth, for you to be at the level you want to be?
I think that I'm in the perfect position now. I've put myself in position. I have a great promoter. I'm fighting on ESPN. I have the world title, one world title, and I'm in position now. And so, like, my fights, the next few fights that I have are going to be a huge game changer for me. They're going to make or break my career. So I'm just going to stay focused, keep doing what we're doing, and go undisputed at 130 and be able to move up to 135 and challenge girls like Katie Taylor and the other top girls in this game, and just sort of just show the world that, you know, I'm one of the best and that leave my legacy.
That's what I was going to get at too, because I figured you would say that, and I figured you clean out or you get that undisputed at 130, the next logical thing would be you and Katie Taylor.
Yeah.
That's a huge fight. Yeah.
And I've heard Eddie Hearn say that. He's like, whoever goes, and he's hoping that, you know, his girl, what's her name? We know her name. Harper. She goes undisputed, and he gets that fight because he has Katie Taylor and her on their roster. So, you know, they all want to keep keep everyone in their turf. But
right.
I do believe, like, every inch of my soul that I will become undisputed at 130. And I've always imagined myself fighting Katie Taylor, being the one to beat Katie Taylor. And that's going to be a huge fight for women's boxing. And, yeah, definitely a goal of mine.
100%. And that's where, like, when you're at the top of your craft in any sport, football, basketball, like, you could be undrafted, you could be any university, or for your sake, you keep winning, you become the undisputed, the lineal champion, whatever. You can't be denied. The right fights, the best fighters are going to be made for you. The team, the coach, the GM, they're going to find you. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, at the end of the day, the skills do pay the bills.
Skills pay the bills. And Coach Al always says, like, it's not just enough for you to win. Like, being a female, you have to, like, perform. You have to look good. He's like, I know you're going to win, but you have to look good. You have to look better. You have more to prove. And women in these combat sports, they do. Like, they can't just ride off one national championship. Like, they have so much more to prove. They have to hustle. Can't rely on a $1 million payday and just coast to the next fight. We're constantly hustling. Social media, everything. So
it's cute. It's huge. Social media is the constant hustle. Yeah. And our industry, too, in journalism. Like, we recognize from the very beginning, you have to utilize social media. People aren't sitting down and, no offense to, like, The Athletic, but how many people are you going to get signed up behind a paywall to read articles that are in this 18 to 25-year-old age demographic? People want content. They want short-form video content. Mm-hmm. They want entertainment. And, like, social media, it has just as much reach, if not more reach. It does have more reach than anything you can do on a normal television broadcast or just any written
article.
Well,
look at the celebrity boxing right now.
Yeah. It's huge.
And isn't Lamar Odom fighting Riddick Bowe?
Riddick Bowe, yeah, that's what I told you today. That's the old heavyweight champion, right?
Yeah.
I want to hate on it because I'm like, dude, but I don't really hate on it because I don't hate on anyone's hustle. I just don't. That's why I'm training him.
Vitor
so
Belfort.
He's going to box?
Are you going to box?
Well, we see him training with me.
Shit. If I ain't getting picked up by another team, I might as well do something else. But cool. I do music too. So, like, I got several things cooking up, you know?
Well, we're training. I'm training a lot. Most of the time we hang out, I'm in training camp or whatever. So when he comes to see me, he gets in the gym and he boxes. And, you know, it's fun, whatever.
No, it's super fun. Super fun. I mean, like I said, I'm still working to get back to playing. I still know a couple of people that's in there. And I know this helps out a lot. Just boxing training helps out a lot.
Are you getting any calls for training camps and stuff like that? Because this is the time of year.
I know. Not right now. It's different for vets. I think a lot of vets. Teams like to see what they got during training camp right now. And after training camp, once the season starts, once they get ready to play the first week, they start to evaluate who they got. And it's like, well, I don't know if I felt so comfortable with this guy, but we can depend on this guy. So,
in the politics, too, with the COVID stuff going on, too, if you're not vaccinated and you're a veteran, I feel like you're getting, like, no opportunities.
I mean, I don't know, dog. I mean, honestly, dog, I don't know. I put so much work into what I've done and being ranked the fourth best all-time in history right now, like, period. It's no excuses for it. So
it's insane.
I know. It makes no sense.
It makes no sense. And I'm glad you said it before I could say it, too. It, like, everyone talks about how Colin Kaepernick makes no sense. Yeah. You make no sense, too. And, like, they don't talk about that, man. Too.
It's wild.
Why do you think, though? Like, what do you think the reason is? Because I've only heard his reasoning. Well, I'm, like, wondering what a good fan, like, what do they think the
reason is? From my standpoint, too, I mean, he's a showman. Right, he's doing things at that position that they just expect you, hey, put your helmet on in the game. You're only there. It's 4th and 11. We need to pin these guys back deep in their own territory. That's your job. Marquette, man, this guy was flesh, and I feel like you could run with the ball too,
then, so.
and sneak plays. Like, I've seen you run with the ball too. I've seen some very athletic plays out of you. I think he was doing things transcending the position, and I mean. Just like how Michael Vick, when he was a quarterback, he came out of Virginia Tech, swaggy, Atlanta. I mean, he was embraced right away. There were some old school minds thinking, no, he needs to be a pocket passer and sit there. But look, his coaching staff, I think it's Dan Reeves, you know, give him all credit at the time. He's the one who drafted him. They allowed him to be himself. I don't think he's ever been in a position where he could fully be himself as a punter.
That's true. And it's so aggravating because at the end of the day, coaches recruit players to play and perform. The coach just gives the advice. They tell them what they want done. But then the player themselves, like, they get it done the way that they want to get it done to help the coach keep their job. And, hey, it's honest. It's real shit. And I don't know. I mean, it's like I celebrate, but because y'all want me to kick a fucking ball all fucking day, like, I got to find a way to make this job exciting some kind of way, right? So.
Well, it's entertainment, so you think they would want people to be excited about you kicking and, like, you'd be excited about you on the team. That's what I don't understand coming from boxing where, like, they love it.
But you know what? I've never celebrated and did all that for the people. I've done it because it's what I do. If you go back and look at the old tapes when I first started playing, I was celebrating before. And the more games you start to win, they just start, I guess the people on with the TV cameras just start finding shit to just find whatever the hell of it. So they caught me dancing.
I was saying this to someone. I think in a football game, 3.5-4 hour broadcast, there's actually only like 11 and a half minutes of actual game action.
Oh, God.
The rest, it's all cameras,
football.
It's commercials and shit.
So I don't watch football. I didn't know who he was when I met him.
I don't watch football either.
So how did you guys meet then?
Yeah. Well,
oh my God.
We actually met. I don't know why you're so ashamed of this story.
Nah.
It's 2021. We met on a dating app.
Of course.
Called Raya for people in the entertainment industry.
Okay.
It's, you know, a little bit more like high profile than like, Tinder. Yeah, so we met on that. There's a lot of athletes on there. There's musicians on there, whatever. And so I was in, you know, I do my training camps in Marquette, Michigan. And so I was in Marquette, Michigan, and I swiping, and I come across Marquette King, and I'm like, it's kind of funny. Got to I had to like that. His name is Marquette, and I'm in Marquette.
And he's a king.
Yeah, and he's a king. Good last name. Go with that. And that was it. We matched with me like a couple weeks later, and then came out to my two fights ago, my world title fight, and just partied with my friends all night until I finished fighting and I met up with him. And if you can party with my psychotic girlfriends all night, then you're a winner.
Thanks. That's so cute.
That's a great story. I mean, I'm gonna take my shot to that story.
Okay, fine.
Second shot. That's a good
I'm the only one with my chaser over here.
God dang.
Yeah, it's a tequila.
No.
It's an upper. But that's a that's a great story.
I know.
Yeah.
We met Pacquiao and Broner fight.
Wait, are you guys dating?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, we lived together. We've been together 2.5 years.
2.5 years.
That's tight.
Oh.
Yeah. I know. We always, people, it's funny because in public, like, we still kind of have to act.
But I'm with her all the time. Like, we live together.
Literally glued.
So it's like, it's not like a typical relationship where we're going months apart or whatever. But
or like someone has like a 9-to-5 and someone's gone for 8 hours. No, it's like we do everything.
I film for her. She films for me.
But that's so helpful. Like, he's so good at social media and he's constantly catching me doing stuff. I'm like, yes, fucking thank you. Like, I need someone there like filming me doing stuff. But we do have a long distance relationship because he lives in Phoenix. And I live in Colorado.
Well, we started off long distance.
Yeah.
For the first couple months, because I was living in L.A. at the time. I lived there for 7 years before I moved out here 2.5 years ago.
I mean, it can turn into that. She just got to train the dogs a little bit better. Dogs can be running on the leather couches.
Okay, well, like, this is the thing. You just can't have a leather couch. It's like, I'm never going to train my dogs not to get on the couch. Like, I've had them, they're 2 and 3 years old. They already know it's okay to get on the couch.
Yeah.
So it's like, I can't just start that now. And then what, at my house, they're allowed on the couch and yours, they're not?
I understand both sides here. Between you and me, when I train dogs, no couch. But they get to a certain point, like, you can't train them for one couch, not the other. She's already committed to it, and she can't retrain them now.
That's why I say my dogs are trained enough. Because for me, I don't mind my dogs on the couch. Like, I was totally okay with that. So it's not that my dogs aren't trained. I let them come on the couch. Like, I let them sleep in the bed with me. But I'll get you a really nice couch cover.
Hey, that works.
Is the couch the deal breaker thing?
No, it's
not at all. Not at all. I'll just be talking shit. I talk shit. I got a guest house too, though. So she can stay down there right now.
Okay.
If it gets to that point.
Are you in Phoenix or like Scottsdale, Glendale? Like,
I'm in Phoenix.
Phoenix?
Because his parents live in
Scottsdale. My parents are tied out there. I went to school at U of A in Tucson, so I love Arizona.
It's a huge rivalry between U of A and ASU.
It is, but like growing up outside of Chicago, the rivalry to me is like the White Sox and the Cubs. And everyone would pick on me because I lived on the north side, but I was I'm a diehard White Sox fan.
That's tight.
So I like when everyone hate on me for that, but the White Sox are first place and black and white.
Don't ask me about anything other than boxing.
I know.
Yeah. No. We talk about boxing and MMA. Like, that's.
Well, speaking of boxing, and earlier you mentioned like celebrity boxing and stuff. What's your take on bare knuckle boxing?
Oh, well, I actually was sparring with, I want to say her name right, Christina Faria.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's out here. I think I said that wrong, but she's awesome. She's so cool. And she gave me a ton of sparring for my last fight going into Vegas. And we talked about that. And that is brutal. The only thing I would fucking do it because I'm just don't give a shit about anything. Like, pay me and I'll do it. But she was telling me that your hands.
Yes.
Like, I know Top Rank would never allow me to take a bare knuckle fight because you could seriously get injured. Like, your hands. My hands are hurting in my last fight, and I have 8-ounce gloves on, so I couldn't imagine.
Did you see the photo of Paige VanZant's swollen hands?
Yes,
after the
exactly.
Fight?
Yeah, my hands were swollen so after with painful. Gloves on, so I couldn't imagine like having them swollen like with no gloves. Like, that's crazy.
What do you make of the boxing level of competition too? Because we see the MMA fighters, and obviously the Pauls are picking MMA fighters, not boxers, to go against. Do you see it as the same high level of boxing?
No, it's definitely a little lower. I think people going into bare knuckle, they are maybe transitioning from MMA, so they're not full-on boxers, or they don't really have like the skills to compete with the highest level in boxing, so they're crossing over into bare knuckle. But I think that's just because it's like the earlier stages of bare knuckle. Like, who knows where it'll go from here, because they are exciting fights. Like, it's pretty exciting when you see people hitting each other in the face with like no gloves on, and you know that someone can get knocked out. So I think it's just early on. We'll see how it develops. I don't know. But the best of the best boxers are, you know, with promoters fighting professional boxing rounds.
What do you think of Oscar De La Hoya's return? We were at his press conference against Vitor Belfort.
I don't know. It's cool, I guess. It's part of the whole era right now with social media, and you know, there's so many eyes on it, and I'm sure he can make a ton of money and people are gonna tune in. I'll tune in for it. But I don't know, Oscar. I don't know either.
I don't know how many seats they expect to sell at the Staples Center for that event. September 11th.
I'm not worried about the views. I think the views will be fine. I'm just like, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a retired boxer. I can't imagine like retiring and getting that itch to come back, especially in this day and age when you have so much social media behind it. Boxing is everywhere. Boxing's coming back. Everyone can say boxing was kind of dead for a little while, but it is coming back, and it's coming back hard. And, you know, you got to give props to these YouTube sensations for adding a little spice to it. I've always said, like, as long as people are talking about boxing, I don't give a shit. Like, I'm not going to hate on anyone. Like, people are talking about my sport, so let's go. So I don't really, like, blame him for wanting to get back in the action and sort of, like, say, hey, y'all don't know me, you heard about me, but I'm Oscar De La Hoya. I can still hang with the best. We'll see.
It's a good fight. I mean, Vitor's fought in, like, most of the big divisions, middleweight, light heavyweight. Mm-hmm. Has he been a heavyweight too before?
I think so, yeah.
He's fought, I mean, he's a much bigger guy physically, and he does have hands. I mean, obviously it's different, but.
Well, you got to be careful when you're a boxer going up against an MMA fighter, because boxers are used to boxing punches. They're used to that certain level of technique. When you're going up against an MMA fighter, they are awkward and they're wild and they throw punches from all different angles. They don't throw normal punches. Sometimes my coach will have me spar a southpaw even though I'm fighting a orthodox, because like you're gonna get punches from different directions and you need to train for that. That's what MMA fighters do. They throw unorthodox punches. Like you just don't know. It's risky.
Yeah. It is, and then we saw the last person, the guy who retired, Oscar De La Hoya, Manny Pacquiao. We were just in wildcard boxing last week, 42 years old, and we were watching him towards the end of his workout before we interviewed him.
Pacquiao?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm so amazed at the bounce in his step at 42 years old.
I know.
It's incredible to see the shape the guy's in, and he's so regimented, because I've been going to wildcard the past couple of years.
I grew up training at wildcard.
So you know. And he's working really hard, you know, and God bless Freddie, and Freddie's there, and he's there every single day, and he's always attentive and watching him. And Pacquiao's got his whole entourage of like 50 family members, cousins, out of, you know, from all over the place, but he's looking so freaking, he doesn't look like he's 42 years old.
Honestly, I love that, because I just turned 31, and you sort of have this ageism, I think, especially as a woman, like you get these people kind of like, oh, well, you're getting old, you're getting past your prime, but I don't think, I haven't even hit my prime yet. I don't think I have, like, and I love that this day and age, people can still kind of come back. That's the other side of, like, these old legends coming back into the sport. Like, it just shows age is just a number. It really is.
I'm so happy you brought that up, too, because, and I was talking to my strength trainer about it this morning, and happy belated birthday, I believe it was on July 4th, right?
Yeah, 4th of July.
Yeah, because, so my birthday's coming up August 16th, and I'm about to turn 30, but after I met David, when I first met him, he would, like, beg me to go work out with him. He's like, please, just come to the gym. Like, he's smiling. He needs to work out every day. Like, that's his fix of happiness. So when I met him, I was lazy. But then I was like, you know what? If I want to train, I want to train for something. And I was a swimmer, like, my entire childhood. A lot of my teammates are current Olympians and pros. So I told David my childhood dream is to qualify for Olympic trials. So he supported that. Yeah. Oh. So I'm trying to train for 2024, and I'm about to turn 30. And I appreciate you talking about, like, age is just a number, because I feel better now than I did, like, back then. And even when I was 20, and I took 13 years off, like, no training or anything. But now being back in the gym, like, I feel the best I've ever felt.
I love that. That is so awesome. And I think that we just need, like, more of that, because, and even like one of the other champions in this division is like 24, and they're like, oh, well, she's young. And I'll get these fucking haters on Twitter saying like, oh, well, you're old, whatever. I'm like, bitch, I would not ever want to be 24 ever fucking again.
Yeah.
Please God. Because you're so underdeveloped. You don't mentally, you're not there. Like, there's so many things, like, and the mental part is such a huge aspect of it in general. So, like, to have that mentality and also that woman strength is a fucking real thing. I know a girl who's like, I'm not going to fight a girl with a child. And I was like, why? She's like, well, because they got that mom strength. And I'm like, you're right. You do have mom strength. You have, like, so many more hormones going through your body as you develop into a woman. And yes, the older you get, the better. Like, fine wine.
I'm like, excited about that.
Yeah, no, I am not on the decline. I am not in decline at all. I don't know about y'all men, because y'all peak.
I mean, look, I'm a legend.
Yeah, he's a legend. And David's trying to become an Iron Man.
Okay.
Oh, well, I haven't done it. The whole thing, I tell her, so I've done a half Iron Man. I always wanted to do a half before 30, which I did when I was 27. I'm 31 now.
Okay.
I'm a little, few months older than you. And then I always wanted to do a full before 40, and I'm 31 now. So it's like, I got time. I'd rather do her goal first, because I could always do the Iron Man. I know I will. I got 9 years, but I'll do one.
And look at the people who did the Iron Man. How old are they?
You get better when you're older.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're
40s. Those guys
and
are
shit.
Like in their 40s, right?
Yeah.
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 And especially if y'all have a kid, it's going to be even worse. You're going to get so strong, you might turn to Hercules.
So Marquette is like anti-kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
And like, this is like the one thing when we first met, he's like, I don't believe in marriage and I don't want kids. And so I said, okay, well, I have two dogs. I don't really crave kids right now either. I don't know what I'll feel like in 4 or 5 years when I'm retired, but thanks for letting me know. Not a huge deal breaker. And also the marriage thing. He's like, I don't believe in marriage. I'm like, honestly, I kind of get that, because I think it's outdated.
I don't believe in the way the law sets marriage up.
Kelly Clarkson has to pay her husband $200,000 a month in spousal support.
Good God.
It's fucking crazy.
They're like new to the so I don't believe in that either. So I always say, like, we'll always keep our bank account separate. Keep your house, I'll keep my house. Like, I'd
it's
never
perfect. Yeah, dual residency.
Yeah, like, I just, I feel like it's a different kind of mentality in that, but yeah. Different than most people.
What's good about residency though in Vegas is no state income tax. It saves a lot of money.
True. I should I should move my residence.
I could have had one.
So what's the ideal play for you for 2021, 2022?
Man, so like I said before, I'm doing music now. My music manager, Aubrey Banks, right now, he's working on getting me into this concert called Rolling Loud. He's working on getting me into that. And I also want to do something out here. I think it's called Day in Vegas. I'm hoping we can find a way to pull it off too, because I enjoy doing music. I enjoy doing that. But also, I'm still working on a football thing too. At the same time, you can only do as much as you can, you know? All I can do is work out. And if I ain't get no call, I can't control that. So I'm focused on things that's going to bring in more income. And I'm in a pretty good situation now. It's fun to live life and do what I want to do. And I'm sure it'll be a struggle to be back in a system where you have to do things a certain way. But, yeah, just music, jewelry, and, yeah.
Living life.
I'm going to translate that for you. He would still love to play in the NFL because he still feels like he has records to break. And he wants to go and he wants to break those records. And he still feel like he has a lot to prove, and he was pulled too soon. Like, you didn't finish what you started.
Yeah.
And so I still feel like you have a niche to go back, and we hope a team calls him. And yeah. But also, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I don't want to interrupt. I was just going to remind that we never got his side of the story.
That's true.
You only got my side.
What you want to hear?
I want to hear why you think you are not in the NFL anymore.
I feel like I'm not in the NFL, first of all, is because I'm a very misunderstood person when it comes to, because even when I went to the Broncos, I sat in the, we had this classroom we sat in, and there was some people in the room, and they were like, dude, you're pretty fucking cool. We thought you were an asshole. I'm like, from what, from watching me play on TV? Like, yeah, man, we thought you were just an asshole. We just talked shit about you. Like, well, I'm glad y'all don't feel that way no more. But I think what it just takes is somebody to get some balls and take time to go to lunch and have a glass of wine with me, get to know me as a person, because you can't judge somebody on TV. Seeing too many people do that. People judge people off of social media. People judge people off of who they are on TV. And all of a sudden, they just assume them to be that way, even when they see them in public. And I mean, I just need somebody to actually take time to get to know who I am as a person, and that'll change everything.
When I first met him, I didn't understand this, like, this hate against him. I was like, dude, you're literally, like, the sweetest, most genuine person I've ever met. I don't understand this, like, this, what people think of you. And, like, the NFL doesn't, like, they think you're this bad person. And I really couldn't understand it, and I still don't understand it. So I really do believe you are misunderstood.
Yeah, I mean, it's just also at the punter kicker position, like I said before, like, they expect you to act a certain type of way, and I just don't do that. Even when, I don't know, I just never been able to conform, and if I had to conform, I just take off, I walk away.
David's kind of like that too, like in, what in you journalism. Do, broadcasting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why would you conform? Yeah. The standouts make it. Like,
exactly.
Why are you
this world's too fucking big to be the same.
100%. 100%. Like, you get the same generic questions. Like, you win the Super Bowl or you win the world title. The first question is, how does it feel? Well, how the fuck do you think it feels?
Yeah.
Bro. Well,
it's obviously good. Feels fucking amazing,
that's
right?
Saying. That's what I'm saying.
So it's like, on that premise alone, like, you know what all the questions are going to be. Why not just switch it up and showcase the personalities? Like, my job as the schmo is to get the best out of the pro, to showcase the personalities of the sides out of you guys that you don't get from the same generic reporting. I just think the problem with our industry is the majority of people are lazy. They're not willing to be docs. Mm-hmm. It's like the people that are just willing to accept, you know, a 500 record when they go into sport, or less than, or just happy to get a participation trophy for showing up. It's like, no, I want to do this because I want to obviously make the most money possible. I'm an entrepreneur, but I obviously want to do something. I want to make people react. I want to show happiness, and I want to provide a whole side of the entertainment side of sport that we don't get before, because at the core of it, dude, I'm a diehard sports fan.
That's good. That's why you need to break away from MMA for once in a while, to show us other athletes some love, because MMA already embraces that side of, like, people. They love the personality, they love the rivalries, and I'm sure you bring that out in them. So, like, yes, let's cross that over into other sports.
Michaela Mayer is pulling the schmo away from MMA for 2021.
Yes,
breaking news.
And you did your job in MMA. They don't need you anymore. We need you now.
Well, I just think, like, I didn't create the character just for MMA. It's all sports. It started with NFL and the NBA. It's just like, in combat sports, you're only as good as your next fight. And I just found things to really stick in MMA, and I've always been a huge fan of it. And it was an easier path to get into, to do my shtick.
Because they're more real. Sometimes. It's just raw. It's more of a raw sport. Like, and the NFL needs to go into that. They need to embrace personalities. Boxing needs to embrace personalities. Fuck the O. Like, never lose. Like, come on. Like, we're here to entertain. We're here to fight. We're here to, like let's just go. Like, stop with these dumbass rules.
Do you know how interesting the NFL would be if they were allowed to be organic? There's some funny ass people in the NFL locker room, and just period. And it's almost like they see you as being a certain way. And if you're not that way, and you, I guess, if you make the NFL look bad, I'll feel being yourself, then it's an issue. But
so I think that's like another next step for what I'm going to do. Like, I'm trying, I don't know what the COVID situation's like. I'm trying to be in the locker rooms this year, like post fight games. And so it's like, if I want to interview Gruden, I want to get everybody on the Raiders, and obviously the Bears are coming in town October 10th. I want to be in all those post game locker rooms and do the shtick, just to see how the reactions are going to be.
It'll be cool. I mean, at the same time,
you should do that.
Yeah.
You should get your personality in there and loosen them the fuck up.
Yeah.
I just got to get in there. I gotta. That's a whole other side angle too. Just the whole, you know, access.
The
side
connects.
Of things.
Yeah, you got in the UFC.
Yeah,
bro. If I was in there still, I'd just invite you as a family member. I'd just be like, you just look a little different, but he's still my brother.
Yeah, we could do that. We could do that. We could
that
certainly
works,
do that.
Yeah.
Well, I gotta get something first.
We'll make it happen. No, we really appreciate you guys both coming on the Schmozone podcast. Let's leave it at this. Final messages you want to get out there to fans and everyone out there?
Yeah, for me. So I am on the road to Undisputed. I will be going up against Maeva Hamadouche, the IBF champ, in October, November. We don't have the date yet, but follow me on Instagram at Michaela Mayer, and I will keep you updated. And so you can tune in if you're in Vegas. It might be here in Vegas. Not sure yet if we're leaving the bubble, but yeah, it's gonna be a good one.
Mark Quick King here. Got a couple of tunes on Spotify, Apple Music. Download it. The artist name Mark Quick King. Also, another message that I would like to put out there. Period. Don't let one thing define who you are as a person, because you're bigger than what that's supposed to be. Like, we're sent here to do more than one thing, and one thing doesn't define who we are as people.
Amen.
Wow. I don't think I could top that. So I'll just say, really appreciate having you guys on. Keep killing it. We can't wait to watch your next fight. And hopefully we'll be there in the
yes,
bubble.
Yes, if it's here. I think the bubble, well, we thought the bubble was going to break. But now, you know, look at all the news. Everything is coming back. So we'll probably be here.
Yeah, I'm going to message Evan. I have a good relationship with Evan.
Oh, okay,
top
cool.
Top guy, yeah.
Evan Korn?
Evan Korn.
Yes, good you got to come then.
I'll come. Marquette. Michaela, a power couple, one of the best in all of sports right here.
Yay.
Episode 72 of the Schmozone podcast. We are out.